And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in a clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Welcome to Podcast UFO for our live show. We're live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Dark Matter Radio Network. Please remember to visit the website podcastufo.com for past episodes, blogs, and forums. During the show, feel free to participate live in our chat room. And don't forget to like us on our very active Facebook page.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Martin Willis, your host. And we have Alejandro Rojas coming up in just a minute with the news. But before that, I want to tell you our guest tonight is Jennifer Stein. She's a filmmaker. And also in the first hour, we are going to be talking with her as well as Travis Walton. And in the second hour, we're going to be talking with Jennifer just about her own experiences, her filming, et cetera. It's going to be all about her in the second hour. And I want to thank everyone for supporting the show, and thank you for listening. Getting a lot of nice feedback lately, and it's always fun to read that. Keeps me going. And also, a lot of people are pretty happy about working with this guy who's coming up with the news on Open Minds on the Monday podcast when it goes out. And so you may hear a little bit of redundancy in the news, but we do record the news later in the week, so if anything happens during the week, you'll get fresh news compared to stale news that's on Open Minds TV. You like that, don't you, Alejandro?
You just called my news stale?
Semi-stale. Well, you know, it's not day fresh. You know,
it wasn't stale before you started joining me. So I don't know what you've done.
That's the change. Wait just one second. I also want to say, if you'd like to support the show for only a dollar a month, or more, just go to our website, podcastufo.com, and you can see it right on the sidebar. So, sorry about that, Alejandro. I didn't really mean to offend you. It was I was saying that I was making the... I can't really backtrack, can I?
Nah, you screwed up already.
Yeah, all right. So, we'll just have to put this behind us, won't we?
Yeah, I'll forgive you.
All right,
I know what you meant, and you'll be happy to hear that. I think everything that we're going to talk about today, you and I did not discuss on my show, so this will be fresh news. It won't be stale, so hopefully that makes you and your listeners happy.
Great. All right, well, what's the first story?
The first thing I want to talk about, you may not know this. There's this radio network out there called, they're an online radio network, just a superb network out there called Dark Matter Radio.
Never heard of them.
Yeah. Dark Matter Digital, they're going by these days, and they replay Open Mind UFO Radio because I've talked with Keith, the guy who runs it, and he says they only put on high-quality stuff. They have a very high standard. So maybe one day your show can get on that network.
Okay.
What network is your show on?
Dark something. I can't remember.
Oh, see, yeah. I was setting you up so you could say, we are on that network.
Oh, we're on that network, by golly.
Oh, my gosh, you are. Wow.
And now that you're bringing that up, I do, you know, we are trying to get better audio quality, of course, before. Well, I'll let you make the announcement. Go ahead.
No, I just told you that you meet that higher standard, so that's congratulations. But anyway, the point being that what I'm getting at is that Art Bell is returning to the radio. So
yay.
This is a lot of fun, and, you know, there were a lot of issues, I guess, with the technology and something working with Sirius. And I know, I guess, one of the issues was Art Bell wanted to reach more people and not just have people have to subscribe. So that's kind of cool because now he's going to be on Dark Matter Digital, and he's going to be broadcasting in very many mediums. And I think this is kind of funny. One of the ways they're going to be broadcasting, because they made a deal with these guys in Tennessee, is shortwave radio. So I didn't
really?
I guess Yeah, I don't know. It's probably a dying kind of hobby out there, but I'm sure there is a lot of people doing it. I know it's one of Art Bell's hobbies.
That's right. Yeah.
To do this shortwave radio, so that's really cool. And what's neat is when I was looking into that, you know, people from all around the world can catch those shows. So that'll allow Art Bell to, reach people all around the world. So when he comes on to Dark Matter Radio, you know, I think much like your show, when it's broadcast, it'll be live, it'll be free, but the archives, you'll have a small subscription fee where you could get a hold of the archives. And I guess that subscription fee will also get you access to something they're going to call the wormhole, where you'll be able to chat and communicate with Art Bell live while he's doing the show. So really exciting stuff. I know people are really excited. July 20th, I guess Sunday, July 19th, they're going to do a little test to test Art Bell's equipment and everything. But I've been reading that Keith has really upped his game. They've got a lot of great technology, and he feels it's going to be one of the best sounding shows out there. So I know people are really excited for Art Bell's return. That should be pretty cool, huh?
Yeah, no, I'm really excited about it, because I'm sure it's going to really, you know, create a lot new listeners for everybody here. And it just reminded me of something. There was some old, I was just trying to look online, some old rock star that's really into shortwave radio. Do you know who I mean?
No.
Yeah, I'm trying to, he's like heavy metal or something like that. But, and I think he also does things like bow and arrow hunting and stuff like that. Do you know who I mean? Does that ring a bell?
Ted Nugent or something?
I think it is him.
Like goofball? That guy is a character.
I think it's Ted Nugent.
I don't like that guy.
He's on shortwave radio. So he'll be listening to Art Bell, maybe. You never know.
Yeah, that's cool.
I can't even imagine how that listens. I mean, how that works. It must be on a separate channel or something.
You have to buy like a radio. You have to buy some kind of shortwave radio. I don't know. Some people have equipment. You see those nerd guys, you know, with their gigantic antennas.
Yeah.
You know, one of you unfortunately might have one of these neighbors. There's always one guy in the neighborhood, you know, who has one of these big antennas because he's into that kind of stuff. And you can listen to stuff all around the world. It's probably very interesting and probably a fun hobby actually to get into. But yeah, really interesting stuff. What's cool about this too is, you know, why is this news now? Well, because I finally got around to writing the story, really. I think it was announced while I was on my cruise, actually, and that's why I'm kind of behind behind a bit on this. But it seems like a lot of my listeners and readers were not aware of this, so they're really excited about it. But what's kind of fun, too, is there's a few fan trailers out there. So some fans are so excited, they've done some filming and put together these video trailers for the return of Art Bell that are kind of fun, and I included a couple of those in my story.
Well, you know, the Facebook has a limit of 5,000 friends, and I was lucky to get connected with Art way back, so he's updating constantly on his Facebook page.
Oh, okay, cool. So check out his Facebook page.
Yeah.
All right,
so what else is going on?
Okay, so the next story is a lot of fun. Now, I struggled with which stories to choose, and there are a lot of cool UFO sightings out there, so people can go to openminds.tv to see some of those. But you and I talked about some of those during our show. And also, we have a new thing, the UFO report that we put out on YouTube, and we're going to talk about those. So I chose some other ones, but this is a really fun one. So, for instance, the Montreal mayor, Denis Coderre, had a video come out, and it's actually been out for a while, but it got picked up by the media recently, and it shows him as a teenager talking about a UFO encounter. So it's a really fun video. I guess Coderre is a beloved mayor of Montreal. People really like him. In fact, he was in the news recently because they gave like Al Pacino keys to the city or something like that yesterday. But this video is really fun. It's in French. And it shows him as a student at, like, a science fair. And somehow there's a reporter there that interviewed him as a kid. And somehow this reporter knew he was into UFOs. And the reporter asked him why he was fascinated with UFOs. And his response is that it's because of his love for astronomy. He claims that one night when he was observing the night sky, he saw a UFO. He says the object appeared out of nowhere and floated through the air, suddenly stopping in its tracks and heading back in the other direction. Coderre claimed that this was the moment he knew it was not an object from our world. But kind of a fun story.
Yeah. I hate to say this, Alejandro, but this is stale news. We talked about it.
When did we talk about it?
I'm just giving you a hard time. Monday.
Oh, on my show?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, I think it's really cool. And it's great that, you know, you think about when someone talks about this, you know, and they're in politics, a lot of time it's a negative or a no-no. But this guy seems like it hasn't fazed him in any type of way.
Yeah, not at all. I mean, there are some people out there, and I think I think this is a good thing for a politician, because you seem smarmy when you try to backpedal or move away from something. It's kind of like Dennis Kucinich during the debates for president, right. And he tried to back away from what he had said, or when they get caught cheating or something like that. You know, when a politician just stands their ground and says, either, yeah, this really happened. I think it was interesting myself, and I think others should think it's interesting. I mean, when you're just true to yourself and honest about something, it helps. Like, there have been politicians who have come out and said, you guys, you know, I got busted. I was cheating, and I apologize. It was the wrong thing to do. Oftentimes, they come through better than when they backpedal and everything. And as we know, Kucinich, when he tried to backpedal with his UFO sighting, kind of didn't go well.
Yeah, whereas everybody, the whole crowd was like jeering.
Mm-hmm. And they might have done that anyway because of the crowd. Right. And it's kind of a topic people feel nervous about. But if he just would have said, yeah, I had a very strange sighting. To this day, I don't know what it is. And then continued on with whatever point he wanted to make, he probably would have done a little better. And I really appreciate it when these politicians just kind of stick to their guns. It's great.
Jimmy Carter is a good example.
For the most part, there are times where he has backpedaled when he's been asked about it. But you're right about Jimmy Carter. I mean, a lot of people don't know when he went into office, he did ask NASA to investigate UFOs. And after much consternation and back and forth with the Air Force, they decided not to. And they actually declined. They said, we're sorry, but we decline your offer to look into UFOs. Mm. So we really did try to get more investigation into UFOs.
Right. So what else is happening?
What else? My last story is just kind of interesting. Because it's two of these maps now have come out. We wrote about a few days ago about how a map, a really cool interactive UFO map that a data scientist had made. He emailed me his site and this information, and now it's all over the place, this cool map. It's an interactive map that shows UFO sightings from 1905. He got the information from NUFORC, the National UFO Reporting Center. And you can go and you can click on this map and see all of these sightings. And in particular, he focused on the mass sightings. So really interesting. A lot of them from Chicago, Illinois, and this area named Tinsley Park in particular. And coincidentally, I can confirm that we are going to have the MUFON state director from Illinois, Sam Maranta, who's an expert on this, speaking at the UFO Congress this year. So that's going to be a lot of fun. You and I had spoken about this earlier. However, what has also come out is another company just today, and the Huffington Post wrote about it, came up with more maps, UFO maps, based off of the same information, the NUFORC information. These maps are really cool. They're not interactive where you can touch them and click on them and do lots of cool stuff. These maps are static. However, they have a lot more information. So you could look at, you know, sightings per capita, the different types of shapes. They have these cool graphics showing the shapes and everything. So some more really cool maps that have been posted about UFOs. Really interesting stuff that has gotten in there. And it's really interesting that, you know, all of a sudden we have all of these UFO maps showing up, and they do well in the news. The mass media picks them up. Usually local areas pick them up to talk about, you know, the UFOs in their area. So now we have two of these maps out there. Why New Fork Data and why not MUFON? MUFON gets a lot more sighting reports. They have a lot more investigators. They have a bigger footprint across the country and internationally. However, unfortunately, and I know it's something they're working on, the MUFON data isn't as easy to extract as New Fork. And what's funny is it's not an issue of less technology. MUFON has too much technology. They have this database that everything goes into, whereas New Fork has a very simple kind of Excel type of thing where you can go to his page and cut and paste into Excel and you're good to go. So in this case, the less technological way has been helping him to get more attention.
Wow. Yeah, I was wondering about that, why they didn't go across the board and even use, you know, early sightings. But I'm trying to remember the organization that they can't find the files from way back. Are you familiar with that?
APRO? Yeah, that's I think you're talking about APRO. We at Open Mind State TV actually is the only place I know of. There might be a couple other places, but I think we were the first because we worked with the publisher of the APRO journals. We have every APRO journal up on our website. That's something, an offer under our UFO resources. So you're right. Sweet. This is an amazing organization with a lot of incredible cases. But, yeah, the data as to their reports would be very interesting. It's just an issue of, you know, even when I started investigating UFOs with MUFON, it was still all on paper.
Wow. Amazing. Mm-hmm. All digitalized at this point. Yep. Well, hey, thanks so much, Alejandro.
It's my pleasure, my friend. It's always a lot of fun. Have fun talking to Travis and Jennifer.
I will. So hang in, everybody. And right after the quick music break, we'll be right back. Okay, Jennifer Stein, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Hi, I'm great. Thank you so much for having me, Martin.
Yeah, we kind of pulled this off at the last minute. We had a little bit of sound issues, but my regular listeners know I'm no stranger to sound issues, but we got it worked out.
Thanks to your help.
It all kind of just something you bought. We unboxed it. We hooked it up. We got it going, and here we are. How about that?
It's great. Who reads instructions, right?
Well, welcome to the show. We met, I think, 2 or 3 years ago at an Experiencer Speak up here in Maine. It was very nice to meet you. And I believe you talked at, yes, you did talk at that meeting.
And yes, I did.
What I'd like to do is bring Travis in, and we'll talk about the movie. And then on the second part of the show, we'll have a music break at the top of the hour, and then we will talk all about you and your background, your past, and some things that have happened, stuff like that. But for right now, I am going to attempt to get Travis Walton. He should be expecting us to call, and let's just see if he does. Hang on just 1 minute.
Perfect.
And... well, be it as it may, the number dropped off. So let's see. So while I'm waiting and looking, why don't you just talk quickly on how you got into the interested in the UFOs to begin with?
Okay. It stems from a sighting that I had myself in 1975, interestingly the same year as Travis Walton's sighting.
Wow.
And I was not knowledgeable about the UFO topic really at all. And the type of sighting I had was so unusual that I didn't even know if it was really a UFO event or if it was like a spiritual experience or something I even dreamed. It actually, the event itself stayed in my gray box for just about 25 years until I realized I was not alone at the time and someone else saw and experienced exactly the same thing I did. And that's when I realized, when I had the sighting when I was 19, turning 20, and then I realized, okay, I can unpack this in my life if I'm willing to. And it means reading, connecting with other people, not being afraid to talk about this, figuring out what actually I experienced, if I even can figure it out. You know, it was one of those high strangeness events. And that's what kind of gave me permission. I had to actually give myself permission to, you know, make that step, make that journey. And that's actually what I presented on when we met, Martin, when I was at Experiencers Speak. I had been invited and asked by Peter Robbins and Audrey Hewins, who coordinate that conference, to speak about my own experiences. And at first, I thought they had asked me to come and speak about crop circles, which is something I've been studying and researching a lot in my life. But then they said, no, Jen, this is your chance. And that's the first time I actually spoke about my own experiences.
Oh, that was the first time.
That was the first time.
Let's try to bring, we'll talk more about that in the second hour. Let's try to bring Travis in.
Travis on again. Yeah, I just texted him to let him know.
Okay.
I don't know if that will help or not.
Well, we'll see what happens.
He usually responds to my texts.
Nothing like
nothing like live radio.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's
right. So, all right. So, if you text him again, just tell him.
We tried him, and
I'm not surprised. If the listeners know, we had him at the live event when he was at the anniversary. He was on site where the whole incident happened, and I had rented a satellite phone and the whole works, and that was interesting also.
Ah, so you did that in Heber last year?
That's right.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, I was there then too, so we probably crossed paths. I was problem solving.
Well, I could have used you that night. Well, what happened was Alejandro Rojas was there, and we were talking on the phone, and he actually was digging through the crowd and the dark looking for Travis, who finally showed up, and we never even used the satellite phone.
Wow.
But it worked.
Well, we're helping to improve a lot of the structure and the organization of the conference this year. A wonderful person named Karen Bard is taking over, or Karen Bard. I'm not quite sure how to pronounce her name. She's a good friend of Alejandra's, and she has conference experience. And she'll be running the conference this year.
All right. Well, I wish I could stop that ringing from happening, but I can't. So I will try periodically. I will try Travis. See if we can get him on here.
Yeah, I've texted him a couple times just to let him know that when he's ready, or when he sees his text, to just text me and I'll tell you to call.
Someone on the chat room we have a chat room running, and it said, have her detail her odd experience opposite of live events.
what does opposite of live events mean?
I'm not sure. I'm just reading the question.
Okay, well, I'll be happy to talk a little more about it since there's been request that's come in. I was about 19 to 20 years old. I think I had already turned 20 at this point. I had already turned 20. And it was about August, and I was in Pennsylvania, where I grew up near the Lansdale area. I actually grew up in a small town called Culpsville. And I was in a period of my life where I was writing down my dreams on a regular basis. I had read one of Edgar Cayce's books about understanding your subconscious. And I was in a stressful situation in my life. And I was trying to find a healthy alternative to deal with it as I was trying to understand my dreams. So next to my bed was a journal and a pen. That's probably why I know about this event, because I bothered to note it. Otherwise, it may have slipped into oblivion, as many things from our young adult life do. So I woke up at about 5:30 in the morning from a dream that I had, which was a troubling dream. I dreamt I was actually falling from a very high place, which is a little odd. I don't know what that means, but I dreamt I was falling, and I saw the ground coming close to me, and I knew I was going to die when I hit the ground. And when I hit the ground, my whole body bounced in my bed, of course, and I woke up, and I realized, oh, it was a dream. So it was about 5:30 in the morning, so I grabbed the book next to my bed, grabbed the pen, flipped it open. Now, it was not light outside completely. It was more like what I call black and white. The sun was starting to come up, but it hadn't fully come up. And I noted that it wasn't quite light out, and I looked at what time it was, and I wrote it down in the book. And I could see about a mile and a half to 2 miles, well, maybe not that far. I could see maybe a half a mile out of my bedroom window. I had floor-to-ceiling windows. It was a modern house that my father had built in the 50s, and we had a little balcony outside, and then a pool and a meadow, and we had Mennonite farmland around us, and we were kind of in a valley. So I could see this farmland and this valley out in front of me. And as I'm trying to recapture in my mind the dream that I had, I see this odd rectangle of white, brilliant light. It is about, if I took my hand and stretched it out, at arm's length, and was holding two quarters end to end, which is very hard to do, but, about the length of two quarters, it would block this rectangle out. But it was very weird. It was this rectangle of light. And I looked at it thinking, well, that's weird. Maybe it's a blimp reflecting the sun coming up, or maybe it's an airplane and it's going to move and then I'll see what it is. So I went back to the book and I'm thinking about the dream, and I go back and I look at this light, and I go back and look at my journal and back and look at the light, and I'm sitting there a few minutes, and finally the light just gets my attention far more than trying to remember my dream. And I say, like most, young teenagers would, like, what the bleep was that, right? Or what the bleep is that? And suddenly, at the moment that I asked the question, what was that light? Because it wasn't moving. It seemed to be hovering and stationary for several minutes. It immediately, jumped in and out of reality, moved right outside my bedroom window, less than 500 feet away. We had a big tree in our meadow, which was about 7 to 8 stories high, maybe 8 to 9 stories high. You could draw a big square around this tree, like its branches were as wide as it was high. You could draw a rectangle around it. And this object, this rectangle of brilliant white light, was sitting above this tree, almost sitting on top of it. Not quite, but it was as wide as the tree. Now, this, of course, shocked me, because it, in a blink of an eye, it was right out there in front of me. And I was shocked. I wanted to jump up and move and run away. I wanted to scream. I wanted to yell. But very quickly, I realized that I was completely paralyzed and I could not move. I couldn't open my mouth to scream or yell. I couldn't move a finger. I couldn't twitch an eye. I was just completely stunned looking at this thing. And I also felt extremely heavy. Like if I tried to move, I was like prevented by this huge gravity around me or something. Something was odd. And I knew, I had some awareness that this object, whatever it was looking at me, was studying me, was downloading something. It's unclear to me exactly what happened. But for me, I noticed a few things. These were my observations. This object was still undulating, brilliant white light. Staring at it made me think I was going to go blind, but it didn't light anything up. Like, my room was not lit up from it. The tree was not lit up. The front of my house was not lit up by it. It was as if it was absorbing light, not putting out light. So there was no light coming out of it, but it itself was brilliant white light, like sunlight. It was like undulated between orange and bright white and different colors, hues of yellows and every color in between. Now, this doesn't make sense. I know, Martin, you're probably thinking questions in your mind like, well, this is weird, right? And honestly, I never heard anyone have a UFO story that sounded like this. That's why it stayed in my gray box. But back to the rest of the event. Tears were falling down my face. I could feel them falling down my face. I was aware that there was water coming out of my eyes. I was aware that something was happening, but I wasn't in full capacity of what that was. And then I got the input somewhere in my head that it was leaving, whatever was happening was done, and it was going to take off. And in that moment, it took off in an opposite direction. So it came in from my left, moving right in front of me, and then it took off moving to my right. So it was, when I first saw it, it was about 1,500 feet in the air, you know, and maybe a half a mile to a mile away. And then it zipped right in next to my house. And then when it took off again in three quick jumps in and out of reality to about a mile, maybe a mile and a half away, and about 1,500 feet in the air, where it stopped dead for a moment. And at that moment, I jumped up, went right up to these floor-to-ceilings, you know, glass window panes, and looked at the object and said, wait a minute, like, what just happened? Who are you? What are you? What did I just see? What did I just experience? You know, where are you from? I mean, all these questions were just came right to the surface. And I was still crying, and I was looking at this object, and then it just backed out of my perceptibility, as if it moved away from our atmosphere up into an upper atmosphere at intense speed. I saw it behind a few clouds for a few minutes, or a few seconds, I should say, and then boom, it just blinked out like a light was shut off. I mean, it got smaller, 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 are gone. I mean, that's the speed with which it disappeared. So I ran into my mother's room and asked her if she had seen this object. I woke her up. She looked at me and said, why are you crying? She said, well, why are your pajamas all wet? You know, she was looking at me. Obviously, she could see I was upset. She also thought I had been on drugs because I was so animated and so upset. She asked me if I was taking drugs. And I was like, no, Mom, I'm not. I'm asking you about this UFO story. You know, this object that was just here. I was quite agitated by it. And she didn't want to discuss it with me. She was irritated that I had, you know, woken her up. It was her one morning to sleep in. I think it was a Sunday morning. So I went to the bathroom and I walked back in my room and I looked at the little clock next to my bed and the clock said 7 o'clock. And I said, no, it can't be 7 o'clock. It's not light out. And then, of course, I looked outside and realized it was light. The sun had fully risen. And I sat back down on my bed and I held my head, like I literally put both hands on my head and just was trying to wrap my brain around what had just happened. I went back. I laid down. I was cuddling myself, and I kept thinking, no, I have to write this down. I have to write it all down. I don't want to forget this. I have to write it all down. And all the energy drained out of me. I was so confused by this time difference and by this object I had just seen that I slipped right back into a sleep. And I had a couple more dreams. I woke up about 10:30 that morning. I immediately grabbed the journal and I wrote everything down. I wrote down the first dream I had when I woke up at 5:30. I wrote down waking up, seeing the craft, having it come in, the whole ordeal, going into my mother's room after the event, talking to her. I wrote it all down. And then about 3 weeks later, I went back and I looked at the journal, as I had been instructed by this Edgar Cayce book, you know, Understanding Your Dreams. And I noted that, gee, that's interesting. I went and I spoke to my mother. So this probably was not all a dream. Some of it might have been real. So I went and I said to my mom, you know, Mom, did I come and wake you up about 3 weeks ago and, you know, ask you if you saw this UFO? And she was still mad about it. She said, yes, you know, and I'm still pissed off about it. And I was like, all right, that's all I wanted to know. So I noted in the journal, well, you know, I did talk to my mom, so that part's real. But I still didn't know if what I saw was real until about 25 years later. I was in Hawaii taking an open scuba dive course, and I was visiting a friend who had traveled with me in a road show called Up With People. I had spent a year traveling around the world from 18 to 19 in this road show, and this fellow was on the trip with me, and he had gone off and spent a year in Europe. And he had just come home from that, and he was completely out of money. So I had driven to New York to pick him up, and he was staying with my parents in our house. He was sleeping outside on a porch we had in a sleeping bag, and he had the exact same view I had one level down. Now, we're visiting. We haven't seen each other for maybe 5 or 6 years. We saw each other periodically. We would get together, and he would come visit me, or I would go visit him. So I'm in Hawaii. I'm visiting him. We're cooking dinner. We're drinking wine. We're actually smoking a cigarette, which I do occasionally. And he stops and says, Jen, I've been meaning to ask you this forever. You have to tell me what happened when we had that UFO experience. And I took about 3 steps back. The wine glass completely fell out of my hand, shattered all over his floor. I said, what are you talking about? I mean, I was suddenly panicked and disturbed and confused, and I was like, wow, this is weird that this you brought this up, because I had just thought, you know, a few weeks before I had remembered this event, and I thought it was time to start to unpack it. And now I'm visiting my friend John Trevitt, and he mentions it. So I said, wait a minute, don't even tell me. You take a pen and piece of paper, you go out in the backyard, you know, write your story. I'll do the same thing in the front yard, and then we'll come together and we'll share. I'll read what you wrote, you read what I wrote. I don't want you messing with my memory, because I don't remember the we part of it. I remember me, but I don't remember you being there. I don't know what you're talking about. And, you know, maybe you have a perception of something else that happened, you know, while we were up with people or something. He said, no, Jen, it was while I was at your house. I went, okay, here's your pen, paper, you go write it. And so we read each other's stories, and basically we had the same experience. Now, what's very interesting to me, Martin, is that John had some perceptibility that I was having the same experience he was. I did not have that. I was totally unaware of that. I thought only that I was having the experience, and I even completely forgot he was at our house. I didn't even write it down in my journal. So that's my UFO experience, and that's what I shared in Exeter. And, you know, I still, you know, gravel with the experience a little bit. I can't tell you that it's certainly not a typical UFO. It wasn't like a craft that we're used to seeing, like, you know, a disc or a long cylinder. You know, a lot of people mm-hmm. talk about these long pillars or cylinders. They look like columns on their side. I mean, maybe that's what I was perceiving, but the way I perceived it, I perceived it as a rectangle of brilliant white light. So what for whatever it's worth, that's what I experienced. So that opened me, and that when I had the awareness that John and I both had that experience, I think it was around 2000, and I had just come back from being in England and studying crop circles and filming and starting to step out of my box. My children were old enough that I could do a little traveling on my own. And I was just starting to begin to explore things. And I realized that this was my opportunity to start to unpack my UFO experiences. So I started going to UFO conferences like the Lachlan Conference. And I started reading other people's work, you know, like Peter Robbins and Rich Dolan and Travis Walton and Linda Howe. I was lucky enough to befriend Linda Howe because she lived in Jameson, Pennsylvania. And I started having weekends when my girlfriends would all come over, and Linda would come and we'd talk for the whole weekend. She'd come Friday night and she'd still be here Sunday. And she would just like, this was like, we were getting a doctorate degree in high strangeness from Linda. And it was wonderful. I just kept cooking meals and putting people to sleep and waking them up and making beds. And it was a great introduction to all things strange and odd. So I feel really indebted to Linda for those special times that we had. Often we did this when my husband went off for 2 weeks to you know, Japan or China or something on a sales trip, and I had the house to myself. I still had to take care of my children, but, you know, I could have company for the weekend, which I did.
I just want to update everyone. I was able to get a hold of Travis through texting, and he is going to be up in the second hour. So
perfect.
We're just kind of swapping things around. So he was under the assumption that it was real late tonight and or his time or something. Something happened. But anyway, so he'll be coming on. So it's perfect that you're talking about this.
And, now, right.
We do have a chat room, so occasionally some questions may come in there. Up with people, someone keeps asking about that. I actually saw that somewhere, I remember, years ago, and it was a bunch of people singing and dancing, right? Is that kind of what you did?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. I traveled in 73, 74, but it had only been incorporated about 2.5 to 3 years at that point. It got started in 68 as a sort of as an outgrowth of the Kent State murders and, you know, the Chicago Seven. There was a lot of unrest going on, and a couple of wealthy patrons wanted to channel youth's ability to express themselves. And music is a great international language, music and dance. So it used to be just like all folk music. And then we hired a Hollywood producer, and it turned into a show with the risers and, you know, stage platforms that we danced around on, and a much bigger band. It used to be just a piano and a couple of guitars, and then we got a sax and horns and, you know, drums, and, you know, we got almost a full orchestra and created something really special. So I traveled in the very early days. And
yeah,
I really thought I was doing something like trying to help create peace in the world and trying to help people realize that if we come together and we are willing to communicate and we're willing to share our differences and actually celebrate our differences rather than fighting over them,
right,
we can create a better world. And the world is really what we create, our own worlds and the world at large. So it was really like a consciousness movement.
Okay, well, I don't want to get too far off track here, but
right,
I just wanted to talk quickly about that. So one of the things I had thought of, have you ever had any or thought about having any regression hypnotherapy?
I did do a regression. I mean, I had, you know, Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs, or Bud was a friend and so is David. David's right here in Philadelphia with me. With, you know, not far from me. They had both wanted to regress me, but I wasn't ready at that point. But I eventually did when I went to one of the Eureka Springs conferences. I met a man by the name of Joe Lules, and he's written a book called The God Hypothesis. He is a trained hypnotherapist, and he was also a professor, I believe, and an engineer. And he was also involved in MUFON, Texas, and he offered to regress me. And I felt like it was the right time and the right position. And this is partially what I spoke about when I was at the Exeter conference. I was able to have some deeper insights into the experience, and it sounds rather arrogant and rather strange, but I can give you a synopsis of what the regression revealed. It revealed that a soul group that I am part of, or a group of other beings, I don't necessarily want to say higher beings, but maybe they're more spiritually evolved. Certainly they have evolved technology. But other beings that I have had previous lifetimes with, maybe from another planet or from this planet, I'm not sure, but these beings came to visit me and surrounded me, and I had memory of them. I experienced about 8 different beings, and when I look, I experienced them first as balls of light in the regression, and as I went deeper looking into each individual ball of light, I saw a face, I remembered a whole personality, I remembered a whole lifetime, and these were souls or beings that I felt extremely close with, and that's probably why I was crying. I was having this reunion of sorts, and I was being uplifted by them coming to visit me. As arrogant as this sounds, it's almost as if it felt like part of myself from the future came to visit myself in my life in 1975 to uplift me and to encourage me and to guide me. And almost like an omen to say, don't worry, things are going to be okay, because I was in a very stressful point in my life. My father was dying of emphysema. My mother was working very hard to support a house we could no longer afford. And I was picking up the slack. I was mowing 7 acres of property. I was working full-time. I was in school full-time. And my parents were also in a point where they weren't really communicating with each other. They've both now, you know, they're deceased and they've both passed on. But they were using me as the conduit to communicate with each other. And that was a very uncomfortable position. So I was really stressed, and I was spending a lot of time at an ashram. And I had a lot of other friends that were doing things like, you know, speed and mushrooms and, you know, drinking, you know, getting very drunk on the weekends. And I didn't want to choose those options. So I was trying to figure out what my life was going to be going forward. You know, I couldn't afford a college education like a lot of my friends were getting, but I eventually did. I worked my way through college, but I didn't have parents that could afford to send me. So, you know, I was just beginning to face my adult life and wondering, well, what is this going to look like? And with the situation I have going on, how long am I going to be stuck here in my parents' home dealing with this? And this UFO experience was like a protected wing that came out and reached out towards me. And that's what the regression revealed. As now, odd as that sounds.
Yeah, it is. It is. I have to say it's rather odd. How have people received this when you've told them in general?
I don't really talk about it unless people ask. And depending on where a person is in their own life journey, I share the story in, you know, limited ways unless I think they're really interested in the details. I imagine that your listeners are maybe more interested in the in-depth detail. And it's an honor to be on your show. So I'm sort of revealing a lot more than I normally do. You know, when I've done a lot of other shows, it's mostly just been about what was it like to produce this film with Travis and, you know, how did that go and how did you get started? I really haven't spoken a lot about my own UFO experiences, but this was my first sighting. Now, I have had others since then, and they've all been different. But this was really like a consciousness push for me. It really challenged me. It challenged me both in 1975, and it again challenged me in 2000 when I finally realized that, okay, I wasn't the only one that had this kind of experience. I mean, John had a very similar experience, and he still wrestles with it himself, trying to figure out what it was and what happened. But I know that this lifetime, I've known from a very early point that this lifetime is about service, and it's more of about a spiritual journey, and that I would experience very unusual things, maybe different than people around me. I had a healing when I was 11 from appendicitis by literally calling on angels or calling on a higher God or a higher being to help me, because I was growing up atheist and I didn't have a religious foundation to rely on, and I didn't want to undergo surgery. I was away from home. I was in New York City by myself at a dance camp, staying in a YMCA, and I was about to be rushed off to a hospital for an appendicitis operation, and I asked for help, and wow, did I get it. Really freaked me out, and I thought I was going to have to spend the rest of my life as a nun or something, because I didn't know from spiritual journeys what that meant. When you ask for help and you get it and you agree to commit your life towards a higher purpose, you know, I spent a lot of time trying to figure out what that was. And now as I'm older in my life, I know that it relates to creating a grounded foundation for other people to begin to explore their own experiences and odd things that happen to them. It's our lives are much more multi-layered than we realize, and we live in a multidimensional universe, and occasionally there are interfaces and overlaps from these other dimensions. And I think that's where precognition comes in, and having a sixth sense, perceiving things in the future before they happen, or even knowing who's going to call you on a phone, or picking up another person's thoughts. All of these things are feasible and possible, and I've been experiencing them in my life for a very long time and trying to find the appropriate way to deal with it and be humbled by it, and to walk lightly on the earth and to accept these perceptions as the gifts that they are, and to use them for good and not for malicious intent or something else.
Wow. I was thinking about what you were saying, and it reminded me of another story that I'd heard, and I was just trying to recall that. When you were talking about the orbs you saw faces in, or something
yes.
like that, beings.
Through the regression. Mm-hmm.
I do believe that. I actually had someone talk about that, several months ago. Very similar story.
Well, Patty Greer actually experienced some orbs, or she interviewed in one of her films, she interviewed a group of people in England who saw orbs. Orbs in a field, and then beings wafted out of these orbs, appeared, floated close to people, and then regressed back into these orbs, and then the orbs disappeared.
It was a similar story to that, what you're saying. So I wanted to actually talk about something else. You are involved in the Pennsylvania MUFON?
Yes, I am.
And how did you, and what do you do with MUFON, and when did you get involved?
Well, I actually got involved right around 2000 when I came home from this experience in Hawaii. I had just come back from a crop circle trip with Ruben Udiarte, who's the head of MUFON in Northern California, and we were in the crop circles together. And I asked him if there was a MUFON group in Pennsylvania, and he said, "No, Jen, you're going to have to start one." So I decided I would start a local MUFON group because there really wasn't an active one. Tom Carey was directing a small group about maybe 40 minutes from me, and Tom has written a number of books on Roswell. And Tom said to me, "Jen, why don't you just take over our local group and do what you're doing at the public library. So I did. I had started programming through Noetic Sciences because I've been a member of that. I had met Edgar Mitchell while I was in Up With People. We became friends. I got involved in Noetic Sciences, and I've been studying and researching sort of in the spiritual aspect of my life. But I never made the connection stepping into the UFO connections. So I have for almost 15 years now, I do local public programming at a local library where once a month I either show a film or have a speaker or I'm presenting or we have a dialogue or discussion or we Skype with an expert on various topics. And they're not all UFO related. Some are health and wellness, some are ancient civilization, but it's basically education outside of the box that you're not normally going to find, say, on television. You know, or we're usually ahead of the game. We're showing things 5 to 6 years before they make it to mainstream media. So I introduce people to grounding, you know, technologies, earthing technologies, health and wellness things, consciousness things, and I've brought in all sorts of fabulous speakers. So this is what I do for MUFON. I am also a trained field investigator, but since I'm also a filmmaker, I want to be able to reserve the right to, you know, make documentaries from the people that I interview. So I don't do film work for MUFON, and I don't go out and do field investigations right now because there's a conflict of interest there. But I do help coordinate conferences. I've done the Pennsylvania MUFON conference with John Ventry for a number of years now in the Philadelphia area, and I was very involved in the National Symposium, helping to organize that just last year when that was here.
Did you have anything to do at all with any of the Hangar Ones?
No, I am not on the show. I don't have anything to do with that. Nobody's bothered to ask my opinion on anything or to be on the show, which is fine. I'm not particularly seeking the limelight since I'm a media producer myself.
Right.
I'm usually more comfortable, but, you know, behind the camera rather than in front of it.
Yeah. Now, let's talk a little bit about some of the films you have created before this one about Travis.
Yes, they're on my website at On Wings Productions. Any of your listeners could go to the website and see. The majority of that website is focused on the Travis film because it's really one of the bigger ones that I've really undertaken. I've done a lot of short films, and but I did do a film with Ron James in California called The Disclosure Dialogues. That was the last big film project I worked on before I produced the Travis film. And now Ron is working with me again. We're actually going to come up with a version 2 of the Travis film because there are some things we would like to improve in the film. So that's currently in the works. That's been keeping me busy all year.
I see. Okay.
But I'm really honored. Yeah, I'm really honored to share that we've won 2 Ebbies with the Travis film, and we also won 2 Ebbies with the Disclosure Dialogue. So when I win at Open Minds, I win big, and it's really a lot of fun.
So you were out there this February?
Yes, I was.
I missed you. I'm sorry I was out there.
Yeah. Well, did you come to the banquet, the closing banquet on
No,
Saturday?
No, I had to leave early. I'm involved in a startup, and it's been crazy, so I just was only able to stay out there for a couple of days, but we had such a harsh winter back here in New England.
Tell me about it. Yes, tell me about it. No, it was worse than Philly for sure. You guys really got slammed.
We did. I was so happy to go there. I wish I could have stayed there for a month.
Yes.
So we're going to be ending this out in just a minute here. One last thing. Can you, it seems to me that you just mentioned earlier your films. Were they all related to the UFO experience, more or less?
No, not necessarily. I've done some on Zachariah Sitchin, on crop circles. I'm trying to think what else is up there on my website. One was a friend who was killed in a terrorist bus attack in Israel. So it was a commemorative film about her. So there's a long, list of films there people can look at.
I see. Okay. All right. Well, we're going to stop now. So that's it for the first part of the show. We're going to be having Travis on in the second part of the show. He's going to be talking about all kinds of things. There's a call-in as Peggy hung on there and asked him some questions. Interesting questions in the chat room as well that were asked of Travis that I don't think you probably heard those questions answered before. So if you want to hear the second part of the show, you can listen for as little as a dollar a month or more. And that information is right on our website, podcastufo.com. If you can't support us or you're having trouble getting through, let me know, and I will help you with that. I do appreciate every single listener. And I want to thank people for helping out with the show today. Alejandro Rojas helping out with the news. Our guests, both Jennifer Stein and later, again in hour two, Travis Walton. Our music by Bruce Rainier and Carrie Lloyd Whitehouse. And so that's it, and we'll see you here next week. Thanks for listening. And remember, you can always listen live to the second and full show, second hour and full show, at darkmatterradio.net. Art Bell will be coming back, and that station should be hopping pretty soon. Thanks a lot, and we'll see you next week.